Neo-tangology. From my first steps as a student of tango to becoming a teacher. Written and presented by Graham Guy. Episode 4. Chapter 2. History. Part 2. When tango stopped. In the previous article, we saw that the tango culture in Buenos Aires had been brought to an unexpected standstill in the mid-1950s due to the politics of the region. But was that the only factor, or were there other forces in play? By the 1950s, tango was being danced in various forms around the world, and so it would be easy to assume that it had reached a critical mass and that nothing could get in its way. But the events in Buenos Aires had coincided with two significant changes in global culture, which contributed to the decline of tango everywhere. The mass availability of television, and the rise of rock and roll. In the first half of the 20th century, most clubs, bars, venues, and social gathering centres in Buenos Aires featured live dance music played by the orquestas típica that were so popular across Latin America. Much of the music that they played, especially in Buenos Aires, would have been tango music, and whilst the arrival of the singers triggered a slight shift towards listening rather than dancing, the popularity of tango continued unabated. But television and radio brought the new and exciting phenomenon of rock and roll music to the masses, and suddenly the old orquestas típica were no longer the only option. With nowhere to dance, and the traditional bands struggling to find a purpose in this new situation, audiences started to look towards the new music for inspiration and excitement. Rock and roll was seen as exciting and rebellious, and was extremely popular with the younger generation as it came from a spirit of freedom and liberation that was associated with the USA at that time. With tango venues closed, and the orquestas típica starting to drift apart, tango could offer little in the way of resistance to this new musical movement. Tango was seen as old, and although it still had its supporters, they were in the minority when compared to the growing tide of popularity seen for the more modern beats. The rise of rock and roll, however, was not unopposed by the authorities. The rebellious youth movement was seen as a challenge to the military dictatorship, and they actively tried to suppress it. Rock and roll specifically appealed to the sort of people that opposed the extreme government restrictions, and this was considered to be a potential threat by that government. But while gatherings and performances could generally be controlled, broadcasting and listening to music were much harder things to restrict. New radio stations were launched that catered to the rock and roll audience, such as Radio Libertad and Radio El Mundo, and the music continued to spread. It even inspired the creation of a new musical movement known as Rock Nacional, a Spanish-language musical genre that took its influences from early rock and roll. Bands in that genre released Spanish-language versions of American tracks before writing their own original compositions in the style of the popular global groups, and this began a youth culture of its own that survives to this day. As has been mentioned, holding a rock and roll concert was no easier than running a tango milonga, as all gatherings, regardless of their purpose, were subject to the same draconian restrictions. But youth culture was determined, maybe more determined than the tango dancers of the time, and they found ways to meet and share the music in private homes and in small rooms behind bars. Finding space away from the eyes of the government to meet and play a few records was a lot easier than organising even a small milonga, and so the counterculture thrived. There were occasional public concerts, although these risked the attention of the authorities. But in 1958, even Bill Haley and his Comets managed to make an unexpected appearance in Buenos Aires as part of their South American tour, and successfully played to an organised crowd. Information about how they achieved this without being stopped by the authorities is hard to find, but it is reasonable to assume that their global popularity worked in their favour, as the government would have faced international repercussions if anything had happened to them. Without the restrictions that affected milongas so badly, it is almost certain that tango would have adapted to incorporate the new musical style in some way. It had begun with fast African drum-heavy rhythms, shifted to the folk styles played on harps and flutes, adapted to the music of the orquestra típica of the late 19th century, and then adapted again when the singers arrived and changed the pace of the music once more. It had incorporated the European waltz rhythm into its structure as tango valse, and although it is less well known, it had also begun to incorporate the foxtrot as an alternative that was halfway between valse and tango. There is no reason to assume that Tango would have been unable or unwilling to adapt again, perhaps starting with electric guitars in the orchestra's tipica and making more use of drums to provide the rhythm, and maybe then by developing a tango-specific form of popular music that drew elements from rock and roll, swing, pop, and anything else that came along. It would have had no trouble with the ballads that were around at the time, and both blues and soul music share so much of their DNA with the angsty lyrics of early tangos that little adaptation would have been necessary. Tango was in recession in Buenos Aires, but what about the rest of the world? The Cold War between West and East was nearing its peak, but despite that, it was a time of relative positivity. World War II had finished, and dance halls across Europe and North America were filling up again. So what happened to tango? The popularity of tango in Europe and North America had been supported by the continuous flow of tango dancers travelling back from Argentina and bringing new ideas along with them. This, however, was a relatively minor influence compared to the ballroom dancing world, and their more structured and regulated forms were preferred in most of the dance halls and schools. They had adopted tango in the two forms of American ballroom tango and English, later international, ballroom tango, and that is what was being danced in most places. And whilst the Argentine original tango was known, it was the music that was being used for the ballroom dancers that was its predominant influence. In very much the same way that Buenos Aires had its clubs with the orchestra's tipica and a strong prevalence of tango music, Europe and the USA had dance clubs with live bands that played their own specific style of music. Big band and jazz styles were common, with bands adopting the popular tracks to suit the waltz, foxtrot, quickstep, and other ballroom dance styles. This continued all the way through the first half of the 20th century, with little changing other than the structure of the bands and the quality of the recordings being made. Then rock and roll arrived, and it travelled around the world at the speed of radio. One minute the latest in dance music was Sid Lawrence and Ted Heath, and the next they had been replaced by Chuck Berry and Fats Domino. The change was profound, not the least because anyone could enjoy dancing along to this new music without having to go through all the trouble of learning how to foxtrot or waltz. It was democratising, accessible, and although there was the inevitable resistance from the older and more established part of the dance community, it was clear that rock and roll was here to stay. Tango may have been pushed aside, but it never disappeared completely. The ballroom versions of the dance continued around the world, using a few of the more recognisable pieces of tango music, such as La Comparsita, for most of their performances. In Argentina, there was still adherence to the old ways, and they kept the dance alive, albeit out of the public eye. Tango music suffered more, however, as with no one to perform to, the orchestra's tipica had little choice but to disband and find something else to do. The flow of new tango music almost came to a complete standstill, and without the likes of Osvaldo Pugliese, who composed and performed music in the traditional style until his death in 1995, and Astor Piazzolla, who began to develop a new style of music for tango that was the origin of the name Tango Nuevo, more about this later, there may well have been no new tango music created ever again. Rock and roll began to peak, and the new styles of blues, pop, including Elvis Presley, and rock started to emerge. There was little interest outside of Argentina in seeking out the old traditional tango bands, and in Argentina itself there was nowhere for them to perform or to be heard anyway. Tango had effectively come to a standstill. By the early 1970s, the political situation in Argentina had changed again, but although the ban on public gatherings was lifted, there was no rush to return to the milongas. Social life in the cities had changed, so there were new places to go after work that were not centred on tango. Rock and roll and other musical styles had taken over as the centre of entertainment life for the new generation, and tango had been pushed to the back seat. Some small milongas did of course reopen, using rooms in people's houses and in small spaces behind bars or clubs, but the momentum had been lost, and it looked as though tango might never regain its original popularity. Those people that did start dancing again tended to use the old recordings from the Golden Age as their preferred music, but there was little interest in innovation anymore, and so tango began to settle. For a while it looked as though tango in Argentina might end up as a footnote in the history books, but then in 1983 something remarkable happened. Hector Orizzoli and Claudia Segovia, two set designers from Argentina who were living in France at the time, decided to put on a show called Tango Argentino, hoping to create some interest in tango amongst their audiences. It worked, and somewhat unexpectedly, the world fell in love with tango. This is the part of the podcast where I now go back over some of the things I've mentioned in the first half and give a little bit more detail or a slightly alternative view. And one of the first things I want to talk about is this idea of restrictions and the military dictatorship preventing public gatherings. Distance, both in time and space, can isolate us from that a little bit, and we can think that something that happened all those years ago and halfway around the world maybe wasn't all that severe, but it really was. This was not like the COVID times when, you know, if you met up to have a disco, you got fined some money and that was about it. No, tens of thousands of people were literally disappeared during that time and never heard from again. It was a rough time in South American history. I don't want to go into it in great detail because this is a book and a podcast about dance. It's not about geopolitical history of South America. But you do need to understand a little bit of how severe this really was in order to understand why everything stopped so suddenly. The tango movement, if you like, the tango phenomenon, was quite localized. I mean, South America is a big place, but really it was only happening around Buenos Aires and the edges of Montevideo in Uruguay. And the impact of that change in politics shut everything down that was at all sort of cultural and, you know, social. It just closed it all off. So, as I say, I don't want to go into too many details, but I suggest that if you're interested, you go away and look it up. There's quite a lot of material on that. Unlike the early years of tango, like I mentioned in the last podcast, that period is actually pretty well documented. Another thing that is very easy to underestimate is the impact that rock and roll had on, well, everything back then. It wasn't just a youth culture movement, it was a pop culture movement. It affected society as a whole. It changed the way that everybody viewed music. There would be the people who thought it was wonderful, and there would be the people who hated it. There would be the people who didn't understand it, and there would be the establishment sorts who wanted to try and categorize it and put it in a box and explain it away by whatever. And so it really had this massive, massive change on just about everything. And because of the television impact and the ability for everything to appear to, you know, quote a film title, everything everywhere all at once, it had this global impact that nothing else could have had beforehand. Think about the Beatles. Okay, yes, they were a few years later, but I think they were 1960 when the Beatles formed, and probably 61, 62 when they really started to get big. But the impact that they had, I mean, we're still feeling it today. We're still referencing bands as being, oh, are they the new Beatles? Are they the Beatles of our generation? You know, it has changed the way that we think about everything, about music and about dance and about society. And everything, these sort of pop culture things get in everywhere. And so when rock and roll appeared, it didn't just change, or didn't just give another option as to the sort of music we could listen to. It changed everything. And this is, it's hard to grasp now, I think, in a society where we have Instagram and we have Facebook and everything is pretty much immediate anyway. I post something and the world can see it, which is actually pretty weird when you think about it. But you have that sort of reach at your fingertips. Back then, this was new. And so the first people that took advantage of this and the first people that caught that wave, if you like, of being able to be promoted globally, just pushed everything aside as they went forward. And so rock and roll had this effect on everything that was in its way. It It changed perceptions. It changed how we listened to music, because obviously radios, there were DJs and discos were relatively new at that point, but suddenly they'd gone from playing records of older recordings and ballads and singers and whatever to playing this new rock and roll live sort of high speed, high powered dancing music, and there was lots of energy and everything. It was a huge impact. Anyway, so yes, that was, again, it's just something that is easy to underestimate when you look back on it. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. As always, I'm always keen to hear your comments and feedback. So, well, assuming it's nice, obviously. So please send me an email, graham@tangosynthesis.dance. And there's links on the websites where you can contact me. So that's tangosynthesis.dance or neotangology.dance. And, well, I think you can post comments on the blog posts and the podcast episodes themselves as well on most of the major platforms. So you can always comment there. Anyway, next week I will be back talking about the return of tango and how it suddenly went from something that was fading into irrelevance to being this massive global phenomenon that we see today. So until then, look after yourselves, keep dancing, and I will see you all soon. This website and podcast are copyright 2017 to 2025 Graham Guy. All rights reserved. The Neotangology logo and the name Neotangology are trademarks of Graham Guy. All other trademarks mentioned on the website or in the podcast are the properties of their respective owners. No part of the content of the website or podcast may be reproduced in any form without written permission from the author. This podcast was recorded and produced at Hawthorne Studios in Biggin Hill.